Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the HP Podcast, episode number 248. I'm Ben, and with me here today is Dave, the glowing one. Hello, I'm Dave. How are you?
I got the sexy lights on tonight.
I like it. You got the backlight going.
Yeah, I got the orange light on because it's October. Yeah. You know, I'm on brand.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are the ghosts doing?
They're good. I'm here with the Phantom, good. So it's, here we go. It's our month.
We should have made October like the month where we like, hey, support us, you know, advertise more. But we didn't because we don't care.
Yeah,
I think Brandon, the most glorious ginger. Hello, how are
I'm
you,
living,
sir?
Man, every day, one day at a time.
Yeah. Every day, every you're day, shuffling.
I'm shuffling. Bee boop bop, bee boop bop.
I find myself right before the show, I always do this, and I like, I move the mic away from my mouth and then back to the exact same position it was in, thinking that somehow it gave me some sort of
right
sound advantage by getting it in a better position. But it's just, it's on a swivel. Like, it's in the same
satisfying
exact position it was
I'd
in.
Say that's a good old streamer tick. Yeah, something like that.
Streamer tick?
Twitch has ruined you.
It could be it. Right. Just something to do with my hands.
Well, I don't know. I got a few hands. Things you could do with your hands.
Please don't.
Ben, move the mic. What the fuck?
I don't want any of that.
There it is.
You're welcome. You guys doing all right? It's almost Halloween. Before we even really get started, a little notice that this week we're recording on a Wednesday. Next week we're also recording on Wednesday because Tuesday is Halloween and that's trick or treat. And my kids need candy.
You mentioned that yesterday, and I've been wondering what are your kids dressing as this year, and what are their best costumes of all time in Dad's opinion?
One year they dressed as Mario and Luigi, the full outfit. That was pretty good. And they're like, people think they're twins often, but they're like 2 years apart, so they look enough alike to make like their height the difference is right for Mario and Luigi. And one year my one kid went as some kind of flying squirrel from some anime.
That's amazing.
I don't know.
Did Dustin dress them?
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't let Dustin dress my kids if my life depended on it.
They wouldn't get any candy.
And then I can't think of, I know they've been other stuff, obviously. One was a Ninja Turtle. I think one was a Ninja Turtle one year, and the next year the other one was
there has
the
to have been
outfit.
A Spider-Man in there. There just has to have been, right?
Oh yeah, Murphy, my youngest, has definitely been Spider-Man at some point.
They went I'm as sure, a but. Ninja Turtle. Which Ninja Turtle specifically are we talking about here?
I can't remember because they have more than one Ninja Turtle outfit, so I can't remember which one they actually wore.
Okay,
fair enough. We have like a 4.5 foot. It used to be in the back of my set. But we have like a 4.5 foot tall Michelangelo.
And you have like the Fallout mask on, don't you?
Yeah.
I did have the Fallout mask on that for a long time. Yeah. But anyway, next week we'll be recording Wednesday evening, the 1st, November 1st, same time as usual, 7 p.m. Eastern. And for those who don't know, if you're listening on the audio, there are many more of you on audio than there are checking us out on the video. We appreciate that. And you're welcome to stay on the audio, of course. But if you want to check the YouTube, if you want to see our beautiful boys' faces, you could do that over at the YouTube channel, Ben is Handsome YT. We record live normally on Tuesdays at 7, but of course, you can always check out the VOD later. If you wanted to switch from the audio to the video, and we're okay with it either way. Also, in case you were just thinking, man, I love these guys. I'm here to support them. You can do that over at patreon.com/ Handsome Phantom. You can go there and support us for as little as a dollar a month. If you're an audio listener, you get ad-free early access to the show. If you're a video listener, sorry. that's all I have to say to you. You don't get anything special except to know it deep in your gut that you've helped support a worthy cause. And if you want to support us, or if you don't, either way, you can come over and hang out with us on Discord at handsomephantom.com/Discord. We appreciate you, those of you who are there hanging out in the chat, talking smack on each other, talking smack on us, being talked smack to by us, you know.
Lots of smacking. What
goes around comes around. There's lots of smacking. You could never really... Yeah, I think I can say with pretty much a surety that you could never have enough smack talk.
If once you smack, you shan't go back.
That's the truth.
I've heard that. A wise man said that once.
Tattooed on my lower back.
Stops. I just say, don't be saying this thing. Now that we're on video, the people are going to start making demands of you, Dave. You gotta be very careful on what you're saying. I mean, we already have a feet request in the chat. Within the first
that's not good.
8 minutes of our show.
It's going to be a record.
So,
potentially the most depraved member of the audience, too.
Oh, absolutely. Feet, absolutely. Honestly. And
yeah. Well, shout out everybody who's in chat so far. Appreciate you guys being here. We normally talk about video games. I mean, pretty much every show we mention a video game.
Yeah.
Or a couple. So let's do that now. Let's talk about number one on our news list. I've got some kind of weird cough right now going on, so hopefully it doesn't distract too much. But number one, Marvel's Spider-Man 2 has achieved an astounding feat. Oh no.
Astounding feat?
I said it. I said feet.
Damn, an astounding dude.
Feat. I wrote it and said it and didn't realize
that
it
purpose,
sounded
man.
I mean, it sounds just like feet. I gotta derail number one here for a second. We got a couple more comments in here. First of all, we got a request for a new $10 Patreon tier to get exclusive pics of the host feet.
$10. If you add the tier, I will volunteer this tribute.
Okay. Okay. So those, we're going to have like the weirdest mix just of Patreon here.
Is this a bannable offense on Patreon? This is just pornography.
No, you can post really lewd stuff. Like, yeah. I think nudity Patreon.
We've only scratched the surface.
I think you have to mark your profile as not safe for work, but feet, I don't think they're safe for work.
Of course you wouldn't, Ben. Of course.
Dustin's in chat and he says, does Dave need sunglasses to look at his TV?
He's got a supernova.
That backlight is brighter than a nuke going off behind the stand. From my understanding, Dave, you don't use that TV. Yet, is that correct?
But it does not look that bright. I don't know what's going on with the camera, but it really isn't that bright.
Yeah, your exposure is like super high.
Just ignore it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Hriz says, the salute to the Iron Lords. You're on the wrong show, buddy. Salute to them, sure, but this isn't them. Sorry. Okay, back to Spider-Man.
To the amazing feat.
Now that we've gotten this debauchery out of our system, and I think Dave is saying you're saying, Dave, if we have a new $10 Patreons here, you will get pictures of Dave's feet.
Yeah.
Oh, the Iron Lords raided? Holy shit. I didn't get that notification.
Salute to the Iron Lords.
Chat had a pop up.
Salute to them.
Chat had a pop up saying Iron Lords joined the chat. Well, hello there, Iron Lords podcast. Thank you, Dustin, for letting me know. I appreciate it. We'll just take a little bit of a time out. Sorry, audio listeners, later on. But thank you all for bringing in the Iron Lords. Like I said, they're great. I was really confused why people were shouting out ILP because I was like, they're great, but why are you talking? Like, come on. But we love the Iron Lords. Welcome. Thank you very much. We appreciate all you guys. That's why they made that comment. I get it now. I get it now. Thank you very much. Addict and Dirt sent me. Well, hello, Addict and Dirt. What's up, Addict? I don't know if you're here hanging out. We appreciate it. We were just talking about how Dave is going
awful,
to have
what an
a new
awful
Patreon
introduction.
Here.
All these people are raiding. Like, what the fuck are they talking about? But hey, if you like feet and you got $10, then boy, do we have an offer for you.
There's been a long-standing joke on the show. It's not really a joke. I legitimately don't like feet. And the guys like to rub it in my face, literally try to rub their feet in my face. And the whole point is that I don't want the feet. And Dave has now offered, because the people have demanded it, that we're going to make a new Patreon tier at $10 and he will give pictures of feet. Are we talking once a month, Dave? Once a week?
I'll do daily. If we get enough subs, then, you know, we'll get, you know, and I'll have different like backgrounds. You know, I'll have like a shabby chic sort of shoot for the feet. And then I'll do one where they're in like mud. And then, yeah.
Will Tim the Cat be?
We can do that theme. Yeah, we can. I'll do anything for money. You know, times are tough.
So just think about that deal. $10 a month at patreon.com/handsomephantom gets you potentially 31 pictures of Dave's feet.
What the fuck are we saying?
Different theme every day.
And if you are they going to. Are they, is it just 1 foot or both feet?
I just want to get. Yeah, you got to keep it focused. Just 1 foot. Okay. You don't want to.
All right. So I was going to say you get two for the price of one, but really, no, it's just. You get one for the price of one. Yes, Dustin, we saw your message that said $15 for the cock. I think that's probably too low.
That's exceptionally too low. That's a pretty low bar. Only five extra dollars for... anyway.
yeah. Well, hey, go check out the Iron Lords podcast if you are listening to this. I'm not sure what show was live tonight. One of the Attic shows, I believe. But we appreciate you guys. Thanks for coming over. If you guys are new here, this is the HP podcast. We talk about video games and occasionally feet. And appreciate it. Thank you very much, Addict and Company, for coming on over. They are usually live on Sundays at 1 p.m. and 1 p.m. Eastern. We appreciate it. Dustin said depends on whose cock it is, whether he'll be willing to pay $15 for it. I think you just get what you get. So, yeah, I think that's it. Like and subscribe. Hey, we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Guys, you think we should keep chatting or should we get back to Spider-Man?
I think it's Spider-Man time.
Now that I know what the hell is going on with people being here. So just for everyone who knows, I just look at the interface through StreamYard and StreamYard did not notify me anybody rated. And then... Here we are. So I'm going to send that. I'm actually going to send that to StreamYard and say, now that YouTube has a raid functionality, build it into your feed so I can see it. For sure. Number one. Marvel Spider-Man 2 has achieved an astounding feat, God, by selling 2.5 million copies with just 24 hours of its release, making it the fastest selling PlayStation game to date. Sony confirmed this milestone on social media. Previously, God of War Ragnarok held the title of the fastest selling PlayStation Studios game. The incredible success of the sequel has led to discussions about a potential third installment in the series. Technically, it would be the fourth, but I didn't write that, so I was wrong. Brian Ennethar, the creative director of the game, expressed the idea that a future Spider-Man 3 game could be even more epic. While that's not a confirmation, it offers insight into the team's ambitions for the franchise. Dave and Brandon, neither one of you have decided to play Spider-Man 2 yet because you are heathens and bad people. But what do you think about Spider-Man 2 breaking the record, at least for Sony, for the fastest amounts? Dave, let's start with you.
It's really crazy what Sony's able to pull off with their first party lineup. And you said it in the story there, the last game the game for which it took the title from was God of War Ragnarok, which was just last year. So I feel like every time Sony comes out with a banger like this, a first party, big AAA game, couple hundred thousand people go out and get a new PlayStation 5. So then the next title takes the, you know, this record, and then whatever is going to come next year might be the fastest selling. But yeah, I mean, you really can't go wrong owning a Sony PlayStation right now. And it's pretty crazy. 2.5 million copies within a day. That's insane. And, you know, it's really no surprise that something like Spider-Man is doing it. I do think these sequels are such low risk, high reward gambles. And that's why, you know, some of these IPs just go on for so long. And it sounds like Spider-Man 3, it's really a no-brainer. It's going to happen. The question is, though, is we got Miles Morales after Spider-Man, so we'll call that Spider-Man 1.5 for argument's sake. Is there going to be like a Spider-Man 2.5? Is there going to be a lot of DLC like we got with Spider-Man 1, City Never Sleeps? Because I suspect there is, you know, quite a demand for something like that. And Miles Morales, even though it was somewhat criticized for being, you know, is it a sequel? Is it DLC? Sony never really confirmed or gave it a position. But in any case, it sold really well. So I wonder if there's going to be something in between that is as substantial as Miles Morales was. If this rumored you know, PS5 mid-gen upgrade actually comes, a Spider-Man 2.5 might be a good little selling point, because we suspect we're at least 3 years away from Spider-Man 3 actually coming out. But this is impressive. Again, if you spent $500 on a PlayStation 5, you're getting your money's worth, because these AAA titles are fantastic. So, yeah.
Brandon, Dave talked about the DLC, talked about potential spinoff. We also heard that they basically said people want a Venom game, and yeah. I think a standalone Venom game is what people are wanting. And they kind of said, like, we'll let the market decide. I don't know. Do you think Venom is good enough to just stay in the Spider-Man series, or do you think there's enough demand there? Yeah. I guess we can't really right. know how much demand there is, but is there enough demand there to do another spinoff entirely and make a standalone Venom game?
Dave said it perfectly, 2.5 million. You really can't argue with that. And from an IP like Spider-Man, this sort of thing doesn't necessarily surprise me, but the achievement that it is surprising no matter what the IP. I honestly saw that rumor about the Venom as well, and I wouldn't be surprised. Just like Miles Morales, I would love to see a nice budget, let's say, title, because Miles, that's really what it was. I agree, Dave, that they were a little bit muddy about it being DLC, about it being its own game, but can you argue with the price tag? It was $40 at launch, was it not?
I think it was $50 for PS5 and $40 for PS4.
Yeah, I would love to have a little bit of a budget, let's say, title come out. Maybe a little bit of a tighter experience. I actually ended up liking Miles Morales more than the first one. I think I might be in the minority here, but I ended up liking it because of how concise it was. And if we can get more stories in this universe in a more concise way, I feel like that's great. It's a win-win for everybody, and everybody makes money, and everyone's happy. Miles was fantastic. I would love to see another 0.5, let's say. And if that's Venom, I'm all for it. And I think the interest is there. I mean, even based off of the 2.5, like, I don't want to say the entirety of this game was being held up by Venom, but I'm sure that was a big selling point to a lot of people, you know? So,
sure.
Yeah, Spider-Man has a really awesome lore, and I think there is a lot they can do with it. And clearly, there's a ton of interest. So they're just going to keep going, man.
Yeah.
And they're doing it right. I know you said I was a heathen for not getting it, and I'm a heathen for another reason. But I will be getting it at some point. So, yeah, right. No, exactly.
Many other reasons, exactly. Really. Yeah. Dustin Furman says, who lives less than a mile from me, as the crow flies, that's an old man saying, sorry, says, LOL, hearing that train on the stream and in the same time in real life was a trip. Yes, for anyone who was curious, that is a feature of this podcast. It is not a detriment. It is a feature.
I can hear it right now.
I
can hear it. You can hear IRL it right now as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You are. That's true. You guys both live about the same distance from me, just in different directions. But I don't think Dave can hear it all the way up there in Canada. But no, it's not that loud. It's funny because that train does not have a set schedule. Like, we tried to figure it out the first month we lived here, and it's like, you think you get it nailed down, and then there's just a random one. So I can't even schedule anything in my life around it, but that's okay. 2.5 million. It's a lot. It's certainly record breaking for Sony first party. It's not as many as some other games out there have had. And certainly, you know, there are things like Call of Duty are always going to beat it, that kind of thing. But 2.5 is a lot. For sure, out of 30-ish million consoles, 30-plus million consoles. But doesn't it seem like, with the way that the digital world and pre-orders are going, that it would have been more? I know that's still a huge accomplishment, but like 2.5 million, I'm thinking, like, there's so many people who get digital games and buy them early to preload them at the very least. I feel like 2.5 million is phenomenal, but it could have been more, it seems like.
I feel like that's a day one, and I agree with you. I feel like we were seeing astronomical pre-sale numbers from games like Diablo and everything like that. And even though 2.5 could potentially be more, I'm in agreeance with you. I feel like here in about 3 weeks, we will get another huge milestone. And it won't really matter because, you know, for a day one, nobody can argue with that. I mean, that's yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not taking anything away from it. It just seems like the IP of Spider-Man and the fact that it's Sony first party.
Yeah.
I don't know. With all the pre-order hype and everything,
2.5 million though in 2023 for a single player only game. And I think, you know, the strategy with a lot of these releases these days is post-launch marketing via Twitch, reviews, YouTube, stuff like that. And even a lot of the actual traditional marketing that I've seen, like I wasn't seeing much in the month of October, and I'm seeing more now that the reviews are out. So I think this one's going to have a long tail regardless, but you're right. I see what you mean, Ben, but it's a big number. It's a lot of games.
I can't remember what it was now, but there was something I was on, a website or like a terminal or something. Oh, I know exactly what it was. I took my kid to a coin show last week. Yeah, I don't want to go to a coin show. So I took him to a coin show. And afterwards, we went to Taco Bell because I'm a good dad. And at the Taco Bell terminal, they actually have advertising, like where you can order in the store. They actually have advertising on it. And on the screen inside of Taco Bell, there was an ad. I'm pretty sure this is what it was. There was an ad for Spider-Man 2 on PS5. I thought that was, I was like, what? I didn't expect to see an ad for a video game on the Taco Bell ordering screen, but
advertising knows no limits nowadays, so, my friend.
I guess so. Yeah. Ed Cassidy in chat says, I just don't like how they call it 2.5 million in one day. And then they say Ragnarok was 5 to 7 million in like a week. I want easier comparable timeframes. Yeah, I understand that. I think that one day mark is important. And obviously the 1 week mark is important. Some games will put out like in the first weekend or something like that. So I think that is, I understand what you're saying, but I also understand that they're just trying to market it. And then Hriz says, what were the total sales for Spider-Man and Miles? I could be totally off on this, but just out of memory, I think at some point they combined them because there was the possibility to get Spider-Man remastered combined with Miles. So it was probably hard to separate them. I want to say that was like between 25 and 30 million. Definitely the best selling Sony first party game. So I think it was up there. I would be surprised, but not shocked if Spider-Man 2 beats it. But then again, you've got Spidey and you've got Miles and you've got Venom and you've got a whole host of other characters that, of course, we won't talk about because they are spoilers and we respect you more than the people who make the trailers for the game do. 2.58 mil is a lot, but I suspect people were waiting for reviews and not going with pre-orders blindly. Yeah, and I support that.
And that's another thing we need to take into consideration. I mean, superhero IP is certainly not what it used to be. And I'm not saying that Spider-Man has fallen necessarily. I'm saying just the overall narrative around superhero has fallen off in recent years. Not completely. It's still huge. Stuff like Marvel is still huge. But it's certainly not as big as it used to be. And I think that's a really good point, is that I think that some people are becoming more wary. Not always. I feel like we still do have a large problem with pre-ordering before we see what is either broken or not broken about a game. But people are thinking about it now, I think, more than ever, because, you know, you get burned enough and you remember.
Yeah, I've never been a pre-order guy, but I'm certainly not now. In the time we live in, where you have games come out and they tell you, like with City Skylines, they told us in advance.
That's so disappointing. This game's going to be broken.
We're still going to release it because that's the date we picked.
Yeah.
But it's going to be
expectations, man. It's so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Number two. A listing for Titanfall 3 has appeared on the Instant Gaming website, indicating a 2023 release date. The game is listed with Respawn Entertainment as the developer, Electronic Arts as the publisher, and a genre described as action, FPS, and wargame. Notably, PC is the only platform listed, raising speculation that the game might initially launch on PC before coming to consoles. However, it is important to remember that it is not an official confirmation, and such listings have appeared prematurely in the past. Now, this is like one of those sites like, you know, Green Man Gaming or Good Old Games or something like that. Well, not Good Old Games. That's a legit one. So is Green Man Gaming. But anyway, it's one of those sites where they just like list codes for things. And maybe they were just preemptively thinking it. I would hesitate to think that Electronic Arts would have told a third party distributor, hey, we've got this game coming. You should get a listing for it. But who knows what's in the back end? Well, we might find out in the next couple of days. Brandon, I know you are a Titanfall 2 fan. I think we were all Titanfall fans. But we've talked so many times about Titanfall 3. Are you hoping for it? Do you want to see it? Do you think it's possible with Apex?
I mean, I think it's definitely possible. I think it's almost inevitable. I think this all kind of started, all the large rumor mill started around that NVIDIA leak. And at the time, it seemed pretty insubstantial. But I don't know, man. It seems like, especially this year, every other month, we're getting some sort of little trickling. And I know the public is really keen to latch on to anything that they're given. I know
GTA 6 announced.
Dude, there's a video coming on, today. Guys.
GTA 6 is coming today.
It's gonna be it's in October because that's when they announced another game.
Yeah.
So it's definitely coming. Watch tomorrow.
It happens.
It's gonna be
it happens with Bloodborne. It happens with GTA. It happens with Titanfall 3. It happens with all games that people love because they love these games, and I don't blame them. They're excited. I'm not going to get too excited until I see something official. This sort of thing, much like the NVIDIA leak, could be completely baseless. And although I want to believe, I really want to believe, like I said, I'm going to curb my expectations just slightly. I don't think, based off of what this is saying, that it would make a whole lot of sense for it to come to PC first. I know some developers do that, but with the legs and the manpower, this studio has behind them, I think that they've kind of figured a lot of things out. I mean, they're the kings in the BR space. Not that Titanfall 3 would be exactly that, but what I'm saying is they have chops, and they know how to adapt their game and, you know, work on the fly. And so is it possible a PC port would come out before consoles? It could happen, but of all the things that you listed here, I really don't see that being plausible. So yeah, I'll be excited when I see more. I will be waiting. I will be there day one. They've pretty much proven to me that they can consistently make good games. Please don't burn me. Please don't burn me. It happens every time. Yeah. I just get so used to developers delivering quality and then they don't. But hopefully, because it's been baking, hopefully we'll see some good. But I don't think it's going to be this year. I really don't. Some people, you know, shadow drop. And I know they did that with Apex, but that is
sure.
That is the vast minority of drops is shadow drops. So,
yeah. Dave, Titanfall 3 potential. We got pointed out in chat here that the NVIDIA leak has Titanfall 3. That's been a little while ago, and who knows? Could have been that. Could have not been. And to Brandon's point about PC only release at first, I think a lot of these sites focus first on PC codes because people look for those on those sites for Steam and whatnot more than they do for console versions. But anyway, what are your thoughts on the Titanfall 3?
Yeah, I mean, I want this. I think everybody wants this. Titanfall 2, I don't think is one of those games that's remembered as not getting the respect that it deserved. And I wouldn't call it a cult classic, but I mean, it definitely is in that realm. This particular leak, I don't, just coming from the site it's coming from, I don't really know if it's credible. But I think what's more interesting is this idea that it may come as a shadow drop because it worked for Apex, and I understand Apex is a different game, but it's not that different. And I think the prospect of releasing a game that is very successful without any lead up marketing is something that would be very, very attractive to EA. So I think because they had success with this series, with this IP once, they may actually try it again. So what was most interesting to me about this story was, like, Titanfall 3, in my mind anyway, could very much be a shadow drop. I love shadow drops. It's so cool when you just randomly get an announcement and they're like, oh yeah, you can boot up your PlayStation and the game is ready for you now. I just think that's such a cool way to launch a game. I understand it's not always feasible, but again, it's worked for EA and Respawn in the past with this series, so why not? As far as the PC only thing, I don't think there's any way that a game like Titanfall doesn't release on console at launch. I think a game like this needs console. It needs console players. It's not going to be competitive focused. It might have some multiplayer, but you know, everybody loved the single player campaign of Titanfall. But I think something like this needs to be multi-platform right from the start. But in any case, there's a lot of smoke around Titanfall 3. I think we're going to get something relatively soon. And personally, I really hope and think it could be a shadow drop. So fingers crossed on this one.
Yeah, I think it'd be funny if they released Titanfall 3 and they were like, all right, here's the multiplayer, and you click the multiplayer and it just boots up Apex.
Well, hey, it could be like a launcher thing like Call of Duty is now. Yeah. So it could very much just be a part of Apex.
Yeah, that's true. Brandon, you don't have that launcher, do you? Do you?
Is it updated?
No.
Brandon, have you updated your launcher? Absolutely. Have you pre-ordered the game yet?
I refuse. Stay strong, my friends. Stay strong.
We'll see. We'll see.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Number three, Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, emphasized the importance of Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard King in relationship to mobile gaming. Spencer expressed that in order to remain relevant in the gaming industry on a global scale, it's essential to have a strong presence in mobile gaming. He acknowledged that mobile gaming is a massive platform with over 3 billion players, and reaching these players is crucial for Microsoft's strategy. However, he also clarified that Microsoft's strategy doesn't involve turning all of its franchises into mobile games, thank God. Instead, it focuses on diverse distribution and business models, which include selling games, subscription services like Game Pass, free-to-play games, and now mobile gaming with ABK's titles. Notice there was no hardware mentioned there. The acquisition of ABK allows Microsoft to expand further into the mobile gaming market. Dave, I think we talked pretty extensively about the real treasure here with them doing the ABK deal was getting King, because as much money as Call of Duty makes, Candy Crush is dominant like no other. So I don't know. What do you think about Phil's comments about, you know, that they really need to heavily invest in mobile and where can that take?
I think it just proved that he listens to the HP podcast every week, because we talked about this. We said, you know, that we talk about console games mostly here on the podcast. So
I actually burn each show to a CD and then send it directly to his office. I got one cease and desist letter, but I ignored it.
Sending VHS tapes holding the recorder.
8-tracks.
But yeah, I mean, you said it. I think the holy grail of this deal long term is King, because once this deal finally went through, I think Microsoft's install base just skyrocketed. And it's not because they sold hundreds of thousands of consoles overnight. It's because they just opened themselves to millions and millions of more potential customers, because everybody has a cell phone, and you know, King is just so dominant in the mobile game sort of market. So the King piece is just so big for this deal, and honestly, I think in sort of the annals of this deal, this is probably what everybody was drooling over. But I really agree with the strategy of not necessarily trying to move Microsoft's existing IP over, because I just think they're different gamers, they're different audiences. Granted, if Marcus Fenix showed up in Candy Crush, I'd download it right now. That would just be cool, because like, how do you even work
that
in?
You're giving him ideas. Stop it.
It just doesn't make sense. I think the mobile gamers are not going to be appealed by Master Chief and Marcus Fenix or Tomb Raider or anything like that. And at the same time, I think console gamers like us, you know, if you start diluting the market and you know, whether it be mobile or console with, you know, these really cool IPs, then they just kind of lose their appeal. So I think that's the right move, kind of keeping the two somewhat separate and not suddenly, you know, doing what Ubisoft is doing very aggressively, which is moving Assassin's Creed and The Division and stuff like that into mobile. It just, for me, it doesn't make sense. But yeah, in any case, this is huge. I did kind of do a tiny bit of research when I read this. Some of these numbers with King are just insane. Candy Crush, 233 million active users per month Oh, that is
yeah,
$5.1 billion in revenue from 2017 to 2021. So,
dude, Spider-Man is a dead game now that I heard those numbers. Spider-Man is a dead game.
It's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
That is go ahead,
Brandon. Go for it. I was just going to say, I think with the move towards like cloud gaming, where Microsoft has really invested more, obviously having a company that specializes in mobile is going to help them enhance that service and also hopefully create new revenue streams for them. But we've already got between Bethesda and Blizzard, we've got, Diablo Immortal, which raking in cash. We've got Fallout Shelter, which is still doing well. We've got the new Elder Scrolls. So like, there are non-traditional mobile games that also aren't traditional Gamer Boy games that are coming that are kind of a mix. You know, Fallout Shelter, that's not something that you'd sit and play on a console, but you're also probably not going to play that if you're playing Candy Crush. So, like, I wonder if this strategy is really going to pick up now that they've got some people who, like, mobile is their baby. They know all the different versions of phones they got to make games for. They know all the different hardware and software and everything, so... and then cloud gaming, I think we can't discount
absolutely. For the mobile market. And I think that Phil coming out and saying this, he's been really good. Once again, let me just say props to Phil Spencer for having some really interesting things to say publicly. Even if it is just complete PR speak, it's refreshing to hear this from somebody at the top and to hear clear things. Even though I think this is mostly clear, I think that we will... It says they're not going to turn all of their franchise... We know what's going to happen, boys. There's going to be a lot of things like Ubisoft. I know that factually, like they're going to get their money's worth for this. But I guess at least we can hold on to, as someone who isn't necessarily super keen on mobile gaming and just making all of the console experiences on the phone. If you're going to do a one-to-one, that's one thing. But I think when you lessen an IP by diluting it, that's another. Yeah, I mean, obviously King is a massive part that I feel like kind of flies under the radar, but I do think they are going to be, spreading their wings a bit in the mobile space. Even if it's not every IP, I do think we will slowly see a rollout of more Microsoft-centric mobile, and I'm hoping it's good. I really want it to be good. I want it to be full-fledged experiences, but, when the iPhone is now more powerful than the Switch, it's like... I guess it really does make you think. It's hard when things like the App Store are just polluted with garbage, but and I don't want to naysay mobile games, but good experiences can come out on mobile, and we're actually, I guess, learning that every year. This is good, man. This is good, and King, man, this is some nuts numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave and I don't know about you, Brandon. Dave and I have talked in the past about our experiences with different mobile games. And granted, we're mostly glomming on to the bigger IP that's out there, Monster Hunter, Marvel, Snap, all that kind of stuff. But like, I'm not opposed to downloading a mobile game.
Right.
If it's a good game. But I'm not playing it because it's mobile. I'm playing it because it's a decent game. And I have some
time on the toilet. That's the differentiating factor I'm talking about. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Dave, can you kick us off with a number four here?
Absolutely. The Steam release of Diablo 4 has received mixed reviews from players, with less than 60% of reviews being positive, based on more than 380 reviews. While Diablo 4 initially enjoyed a positive reception, the addition of Season 1 updates and changes might have impacted player sentiments. As of the latest data, the game falls short of the 70% positive reviews needed for a mostly positive rating, sitting in the mixed category. This release followed the Steam launch of Overwatch 2, which received an overwhelmingly negative rating based on user reviews. However, it's worth noting that the Diablo 4 player count on Steam is around 2,374, potentially due to the game's availability elsewhere on PC since its June launch. Overwatch 2, on the other hand, reached a 24-hour peak of 31,457.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. Can I tell you why that's rough, boys? Extra. Think about it. Overwatch 2. Now, I can't say too much. I can't say too much. And if you're in the Discord, you'll know why. Poot will get me.
Poot will get you. But yeah.
for the clear cash grab, for the most part, that Overwatch 2 is, to have an entirely new, it's not a new IP, a new launch, a new iteration of an IP, have such low numbers comparatively to something that is, by all accounts, an unarguably very similar to the Overwatch 1 and 2 counterpart, that stings. That has to sting so bad, man, to have Overwatch 2. And now, people will say, Brandon, they got rid of Overwatch 1. They have so many numbers on Overwatch 2 because they got rid of Overwatch 1. And you might be right. But to see these numbers, and I will agree with what you said, what you read there, Dave. A lot of people are probably playing it elsewhere. But we have to put some weight into these numbers, just a little bit. It kind of does give you a little picture into it. And for the reviews being overwhelmingly negative, I mean, what are the numbers saying here? You know? So...
I don't know if either of you can speak to this. Maybe chat can while we're talking. Do you have to buy the game on Steam to review it? Can you return it and your review stay? Do you guys know?
I think it shows how many hours like you've played. So in order to be able to return it, you have to have played 2 hours or less. So theoretically, it'll show that like you haven't played very much of the game. So even if your review remains theoretically, you delegitimize by not playing the game enough. Your review.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think that's true. I'm just curious, like everybody out there already knows what Diablo 4 is before it was on Steam. Is a negative rating on Diablo 4 on Steam going to hurt the game, the game's success?
No, it's not.
I don't think it is. And the reality is that all those people who left those reviews at least bought the game. Maybe they did return it, but then the reviews, like Dave said, are discounted. So I've not really understood. I understand the concept and even maybe agree with the principle behind review bombing for the right reasons, obviously. If a game's bad, review bomb it all you want. But I've never really understood the idea of artificially downvoting the game, I guess I could say.
So here's the problem, though. I would agree with that mostly, but I feel like this shows a very, and some of it's unwarranted. I've seen things where, you know, there's negative discourse that is mostly baseless, but I mean, this very clearly shows that there's like a fragmented audience. You know, we can't put all of our weight in reviews. Like, nobody should put all their weight in any review ever. Take it with a grain of salt, but
unless it's ours.
But you know, this definitely shows that people aren't happy. And I guess sometimes the loudest voice is, you know, what do they say? The squeaky wheel gets the oil, but you know, that shit's still squeaking.
Dave, are you squeaking?
I am. I'm squeaking with anger is what I'm doing. Because I just review discourse is so stupid, and it's review bombing, I think, is kind of a product of this. Gamers are fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're just idiots. Like, I don't know. Why can't we just be adults? And like, we have things like Discourse now where you can like openly engage with developers and tell them how you feel about their game. And when it's a game like Diablo, again, I know I'm giving people way too much credit than they're owed, but theoretically, like, a game like Diablo that you could be playing for like 10 years, like if there's something you don't like about it, there are ways you can have your voice heard. And I just think like bombing the shit out of something on like Metacritic or Steam is just like, people complain about the numbers that reviews are given, and it's an arbitrary number, but then like they turn around and use review bombing to get people to not buy a game. It's like, you're mad about people giving the wrong numbers in reviews, and then you just completely delegitimize it. So I was seeing like this, there was this article on this news aggregator site that I'm not going to name. And there was a bunch of people in the comments getting mad at this particular reviewer because they gave Spider-Man 2 a 7 out of 10 and they were upset because they brought the Metacritic score below 91. And I'm like, who fucking cares? Do you like the game? Like, why is this a problem? Why are you arguing on the internet about this? But I don't know. This is just one of those things where I'm losing faith in humanity because like people are ruining reviews for everyone. And this is part of it. So no, it was N4G was the site. So
yeah. Dave, it's harder to make a graphic that proves that you have the better plastic box if the score goes down by a point. I don't know if you,
do you remember
that
though, Ben, like when we were reviewing games and I actually like had a conversation with you once where I was like, do I need to give this game a number? Like, I'd rather just write about it. And you agreed with what I was saying. But the sad truth is like, if you want your reviews to be legitimate, they need to go on the aggregator sites. And in order to get on the aggregator sites, they need a number because that's what people want to fight over. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah. If some of the bigger sites that are out there now are allow, like Open Critic and Metacritic, not Metacritic as much, but Open Critic allows sometimes for you to put a site or put a review up without a numbered score, but they still convert it into a numbered score. Like they have they still have a scale and they convert it ultimately. And by the way, I recently found out.
Sorry, I just noticed this.
I was dying.
You just saw my subtitle. It's just a quote.
Gamers are fucking dumb, Dave.
Yeah. So for a long time, I thought, and maybe they were, that Open Critic did not weight anything, but they actually do, because the what's it called? Top critics, the top critic score you see, which is what the aggregate score actually is on Open Critic, is only comprised of a certain percentage of the top most important websites or reviewers or whatever, whether they be YouTubers or websites. So they don't weight them, but they only include them in that top critic score, which is the number everybody sees. So that's why they're so often so close to the Metacritic scores, which do weight things, because you're still only including voices. The same.
Yeah.
You're not quite weighting them, but you're still only including the same people. And they made that change at some point when we were still posting reviews and they were in the aggregators. And I was like, this is dumb. And I forgot about that. And only recently remembered it again, mostly because I was looking at the back end of Open Critic to look for one of our reviews that I just wanted to read again. So, yeah, the whole thing is dumb. I've never liked numbered reviews. But you're right. You have to play that game if you want to get the clicks. And the problem is that then people use your score to console war about it so that they can get clicks. And so it's just a vicious cycle. Let's see. Ed in chat says, I can't get too mad at review bombing because if you bought the game, what other method do you have to communicate easily and visibly to a publisher or developer of dissatisfaction? And he's 100% right. I mean, you have other methods, but, there's a fine line between tweeting at the developer, telling them that you didn't like their game and harassment. Right. And it really just depends on who the person is, on how they take that. So yeah, you've got to be able to do it, but I just can't imagine that somebody like Blizzard with Overwatch or Diablo gives a shit what their critic rating is Steam. You know, it just doesn't matter because they're selling millions of
Bobby's
copies.
Bobby's wiping his tears with money. I recently submitted like a ticket to Lords of the Fallen's website. I didn't tweet about it. I didn't write a bad review. I submitted a performance ticket and I said, hey, look, I'm seeing all kinds of coverage on all these other versions of the game getting support and needing work. What about the PS5 version? See, I feel like that actually is a constructive way to go about it. And there are other ways. Sure. I just feel like, like I said earlier, it's just the dumbest are often the loudest.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, unfortunately. All right, let's move on to number 5. Nintendo has indirectly confirmed that the successor to the Switch, often referred to as the Switch 2, will likely support backwards compatibility. Now, there's a lot of caveats here that we'll talk about, but during an interview, Nintendo of America President Doug Bowser hinted at this possibility, mentioning the creation of the Nintendo account as a way to facilitate a smooth transition between platforms. While he didn't specify the features of the Switch 2, this suggests that Nintendo is actively working to minimize the disruption often associated with transitioning from one console generation to the next, specifically with Nintendo. Bowser didn't provide details about the specific features of the Switch 2, but there have been previous discussions about its potential support for DLSS, and it's believed that the console may support 3.5 ray construction, although it may not be a feature complete compared to the PC version. It's expected that the console will use a custom feature set rather than the full DLSS feature set. Brandon, we've talked a lot about your hatred for Nintendo, and I know some of it's in jest and some of it's completely serious. We know that Nintendo is working, apparently, on a way to continue your account from one console to the next. But what we don't know for sure is, does that mean that the games that you already own will also be available on that account? Or is it just an account to keep your name and address in their system? And then secondly, will we be able to play Switch 1 games on the Switch 2? I know we don't have the answers for that.
No, that's kind of the going to be the selling point for me, honestly. My Switch library isn't massive, and I feel like it will be paramount for me to continue that library into the next generation. I've expressed my dissatisfaction with the performance of the Switch previously, but I mean, a lot of the early things I'm seeing about the Switch making me believe, and maybe it's just really, really good hype. Maybe it's just really, really good buzzwords, but I'm really hoping we're getting a little bit more power. You know, I mean,
I think a little bit is the key word there.
And you're probably right, Ben. I think I'm probably going to end up getting my hopes up. And you know how these things go, Ben. Sometimes I'll fold at the last minute and buy the game, but I don't know that I can fold and buy a console. I mean, that's kind of in a different realm altogether. So I would love to see the Switch succeed. I really would, in spite of everything I've ever said about Nintendo. They're a great company, and they put out a good product, and that is inarguable. But these big boy PC acronyms, if they are truly coming to the Switch, I think this is a welcome addition. And even if it's a slimmed down version, if they can make their games perform better and look better and kind of get themselves into the modern standard. Now, I don't need hyper realism. This isn't what Nintendo's known for, but I would love to see them elevate themselves in the next iteration of an incredibly, incredibly previous generation. I would love it. I just hope that they do the right thing that they've never done before and make us be able to play our Switch 1 games on our Switch 2. I'm worried and I'm concerned, and if I had to bet on it, I'm not a betting man. I would bet we're not going to be able to do that. But I want to hope, man. I want to hope, because I don't want my Switch library, which is already small, to, you know, completely be decimated by the Switch 2. So,
Dave, now you're the digital guy on the show, but you buy most of your, at least big party, you know, first party titles on Switch. You buy them physically, right?
Yeah, because it's the only thing I can buy physical games on. And Super Mario Wonder is in the mail right now, and it is physical. So
nice. Yeah. Nice. So do you think there's any prayer that we see any kind of backwards compatibility with the Switch 2? Because I understand people saying, like, oh, you're never going to go back and play those PS3 games or whatever, which I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. Whereas Nintendo games are timeless. Like, I can go back and play Super Mario Odyssey when I'm 75 years old and still have a great time. Do you think there's any hope that we could see physical or digital games go forward with the next Switch? And should
Nintendo
we want that?
Nintendo seems to have taken kind of a, I don't want to say shitty, but they have really capitalized on their back catalog of games. And I'm going back to like the 80s, and I'm looking at like the virtual consoles that you can get on the eShop with the Nintendo subscription, whatever it is. So I would think that if this is sort of a light upgrade, an upgrade isn't the right word, but, you know, not so much like a full successor to the Switch, like a brand new console, but like a step forward. I would think that the Switch stuff has to be backwards compatible. But it's going to be interesting to see how they do this. And, you know, Nintendo always kind of does weird stuff with their consoles, and we never know what we're going to get. So I'm really curious to see what this console is actually going to look like, how the functionality is going to work. Someone just mentioned Metroid Dread in the comments. Like, what is the next Metroid? How is that going to function? Is it going to be on both consoles, or is it just going to be on the next Switch? But yeah, it's going to be one of those things that's really interesting to see, because Nintendo always kind of surprises. But the other thing I wanted to touch on from this story is I really hope that Nintendo, and I know they will, I really hope that Nintendo continues to focus on form and functionality over cutting edge tech. Yes, I think we need a bit of a bump in performance, because games like Tears of the Kingdom don't really run all that well. But at the end of the day, I think what they do is what sets them apart from, you know, the other competitors. And it's the reason why I feel like I need to have a Switch in addition to a PlayStation or an Xbox. It's not one or the other kind of thing, because it's just such a nice compliment to the sort of AAA gaming that I do on my other consoles. So I really hope they come out with something that's really fun and easy to use. And I think what they've proven over the past 10, 20 years is that Mario and Zelda and Kirby and stuff like that, they don't need cutting edge technology. They don't need, you know, photorealistic graphics or 120 FPS and stuff like that, because they're just great with, you know, something that's a little bit less. So I'm okay with them kind of taking a bit of a step forward. They don't need to compete with Sony and Microsoft with, you know, the big boy tech consoles. Just keep doing what you're doing. But in any case, I hope we get something soon, because we've been talking about this for a long time, and I really want to know what the Switch 2 looks like and feels like.
Not to, to jump ahead to the what we've been playing section, but I'm playing Spider-Man 2 and Mario Wonder right now. And it's exactly what you're saying, Dave, where like it's very easy to juggle a Mario game specifically on the Switch, because like there's been a couple times where I'm like, well, I want to go to bed in about an hour. That's probably not really enough time to play, to jump in and play Spider-Man right now, because I really know I'm going to get sunk into that game. But hey, I can grab my Switch and play Mario Wonder for 45 minutes and maybe beat four or five levels and have a blast, and I'm not going to feel like I have to keep going because there's nothing to urge. So like it's the perfect companion. But yeah, it would be nice if the perfect companion was a little stronger, I think. So yeah, we'll see. For me, all my games, with the exception of some indies and maybe a couple I got on sale, I have a pretty big Switch library actually, but all of them are physical for the most part, and I would hate to not be able to play them on the next console, but I think it's much more likely that the digital games will go forward as opposed to the physical games. And hey, I'm used to having to play, for Nintendo especially, pull out the old console in order to play the game. And, you know, how are they going to sell me another subscription if I have access to my old games anyway? So we'll see.
I was just laughing at Ed Cassidy's comment. Like, can we just stick with Super Switch until we get an official title? Because that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I thought we had talked about that before. Yeah. I get confused on what shows I edit and what they say and what we say. And it's a whole thing. So Super Switch it is. All right. Let's move forward. Dave, this one is specifically and very targeted at you. Number 6. Despite a major update aimed at addressing technical issues and improving gameplay, Arkane's open-world vampire-hunting FPS Redfall is still struggling to attract players on Steam. The game faced criticism upon its launch for its numerous bugs, performance problems, and design choices. Arkane had promised a 60 FPS patch for consoles after launch, which was included in recent updates, along with other improvements. Despite these changes, the game's player count on Steam has dwindled down to just 36 players, with a 24-hour peak of 42 players, and an all-time peak of 6,124. It's important to note that these numbers only reflect Steam, not Xbox consoles or PC Game Pass. While Redfall may be experiencing more players on Xbox, the game's fundamental design issues and competition from other popular titles may be affecting its overall reception and its terrible launch. With the recent update, Arkane might have addressed most of the technical issues, but its core gameplay and design still face criticism. It remains to be seen how the game will perform over time. And for those who don't know, if you're new or you just don't remember, Dave has entered into a legally binding contract with Brandon and I that if he does not achieve his goal of doing something I can't remember in Gran Turismo by the end of the year, he has to play Redfall next year. And Redfall, I have never seen Dave more... I've seen Dave more angry, but not sober. I've never seen Dave more angry than right after Redfall came out. So, Dave, kick it off. Tell me what you think about... Are you going to make Redfall's player count 37 players instead of 36?
I mean, at this rate, it looks like in January I am going to be contractually obligated to do that. Yeah, this is really sad, and it's following an unfortunate trend of like big, like really revered studios being purchased by like bigger evil companies, and then they're forced to put out something that they don't normally do, usually live service, and completely like killing those studios. So I'm looking at like BioWare with Anthem, and then Crystal Dynamics with like Avengers, and it's just... This sucks. It really does. And Arkane is such like a good studio, and I think they were cornered into doing something that they didn't want to do and really isn't in their style. And I think in order for this game to be saved, it needs, you know, that No Man's Sky cyberpunk kind of treatment. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to go the way of Anthem, where, you know, maybe we'll get a couple other images on Twitter of like, this is our roadmap, and then it's just going to go away, which is okay, because I'd really like to see Arkane sent back to doing what they're best at, which is, you know, single player stuff that's just focused on narrative and really cool level design and that are just creatively engaging. And I do think that Microsoft is smart enough to let Arkane go back and do what they do best and maybe not waste too much time on Redfall. So I don't think Redfall is going to get to the point that No Man's Sky did. I don't think it's that kind of game. And I think Arkane and Microsoft should just kind of cut bait at this point. I'm going to play it. I think I'm going to have to play it. And it is what it is. Let's just turn the page on Redfall. That's my stance on this whole thing.
Just call a spade, call Dave a Redfall enjoyer. Brandon, I also saw you pretty upset when Redfall was out because it kept resetting your progress. Are you going to dive back in now with this new update? I know it's been, that was a couple weeks ago we talked about the update, but hey, you and Dave could make the player count 38.
You could be there too, Ben.
I could not.
You see this, Dave?
My computer is physically incapable of installing the game again. It refuses.
Yeah, I mean, this is a sad story. We've said it since the game came out. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate to see that it's taken this long for any sort of sizable improvement, especially being that they were radio silent up until this point. So I feel like, if there was enjoyers of this game, it would kind of sting even more to not have any peek behind the curtain. And then an update comes out, which by many accounts is a good thing for the game overall, but it doesn't really fix some fundamental and large issues that the game suffers from. So
like
the
you
game,
know,
yeah, the just, game. Just the entirety of it. But yeah, sad to see. I mean, we did have high hopes. I think a lot of people had high hopes. I think Microsoft probably had high hopes, but Arkane had to have known what was happening. And Dave's right. It is sad to see. I guess not even for the sake of Redfall. It's sad for Arkane. It really is. So,
yeah. Yeah, like Dave said, they're phenomenal. And we know that Microsoft had high hopes because we saw those leaked emails from Phil Spencer, or they weren't leaked. They were in the court case saying that they hope it's a huge success. We've heard tell that Arkane was trying to get the game canceled and Microsoft wouldn't cancel it, which is understandable, I suppose, with so much money invested.
I said that's a good sign, right?
What'd you say? Yeah, it's a really good sign when your devs want the game to be canceled. So definitely a flop all around. Hopefully they learn their lesson and they let Arkane do what Arkane wants to do and what Arkane's good at, but we will see. There's a, you know,
yeah,
time will tell, I suppose. In chat here, to be fair, Redfall was greenlit while Bethesda was doing Fallout 76 and Wolfenstein Youngblood and Dishonored 2 and Evil Within 2, just needing cash after a handful of disappointing sales numbers. I think that's probably partially true. Those games all did have disappointing sales numbers at the beginning, and they were not, you know, great successes. But I don't know how a game like that, it's just bad management. Like, even if they said, you guys need to make a live service vampire game, Arkane was like, all right, we're on it. From that point to the time it released, like, did nobody else look at it? That's the thing that gets me, is like, it was, I don't know. And Dave, and Brandon, you said one other thing. You said, I think we were all looking forward to it. From the moment I saw Redfall, I said, this is not going to be a good game.
Dude.
Now, it wasn't because I thought it was going to be a buggy mess like it was, but I didn't think it was going to be very good because it was Arkane making a game that was not Arkane. So you just, you know, can't teach an old dog new tricks or something like that. Actually, I'm not sure the feelings on Arkane at all, but
it probably has a lot totally less to do with Arkane than anyone will ever know. So,
Yeah. Boys, it's about that time of the show where we talk about what we've been playing. And
yeah, absolutely.
Brandon, we'll start with you.
I want to start with something old. I didn't really tell you guys I was playing this, but I think I might have mentioned that I was playing Master Chief Collection. Did I mention that? Yeah. So
You told me, but I don't know if
I was checking
on the
out Master Chief Collection, which by all accounts is mostly fixed. I will say I unfortunately was having a little bit of performance issues, but
good for them. They did that
by,
quick. Good for
by
them.
By most accounts, I would hope at this point we're pretty solid. And it seems like that's the case because I've dabbled in the Master Chief Collection, but I've never like sunk my teeth in. That being said, I wanna say with a long time coming here, boys, I finally finished for the first time ever Halo Combat Evolved. For the very first time ever, I finished Halo Combat Evolved. And I gotta say, man,
nice.
I see where it all started. I have a great appreciation for the series, having seen where it came from. And I will say that playing Halo Combat Evolved in 2023 is definitely a unique lens to look at it through. I feel like, I just have a lot of respect for it because at the time I can definitely see how innovative it was. Having played it this year, I see a lot of its shortcomings. I mean, in some ways, they kind of made half of a game's levels and then you play all of them front and back. Like you play them forward and backward, which, you know, is an interesting thing, but gotta say, really, really enjoy the time I had with it. And on the back of that, boys, Halo 2, I started Halo 2 and oh my God, I've never beat Halo 2 either. I'll say off the top, I beat Reach, I beat Halo 4, I did not beat Infinite. Those are the games I've played. I started Halo 2, and my God, what a fucking upgrade Halo 2 is. Right away, I'm interested, dude. Right a fucking way. And I love the plot lines in the first one about the Flood. I mean, it's creepy, it's spooky, but the whole Arbiter storyline right at the beginning, I got up until when you first start to play as Arbiter, and man, is it fucking cool. I love the fact that you can switch back and forth between the graphics. This is nothing new to anybody. It's mesmerizing every single time I do it. But I gotta say, an extra step above that is the cutscenes. Like the upgraded cutscenes are fucking good. They look a little dated at this point. They're a little blurry. But they're fucking cool. I gotta say, Halo 2 is a banger right off the bat for me. I don't want to say I wasn't interested in the story of Halo Combat Evolved, but the level design was kind of weighing down my enjoyment of how interesting and spooky the game was. But Halo 2, super cool. Excited to keep playing it. Finally finished Halo Combat Evolved. And I'm honestly planning to keep going. I want to go back through the whole series, and I hope to finish Infinite at some point. It's going to be one of those like slow burn things for me.
It's so shocking to me with how big of an FPS fan you are that you've never.
And I've played bits and pieces. Like I started Halo 2 and I remember some of the levels in Halo 2, but I was a PlayStation household. The only time I played Xbox games until I had my 360, which is when I got Reach, was when I was at my buddy's houses. So I got pieces. I have a lot of Halo 3's campaign. I know a lot of it. I played ODST and I remember some of Halo 2, but I never like played them. You know what I mean? So it's super fun. And I love that I'm playing it on my PC. First person shooters on PC are like bar none where it's at this point for me. So, that, and I've been playing Lords of the Fallen some more. I'm still enjoying it quite a bit. I don't know what else to say about this game that I haven't already said. It still has performance issues. I think I said this last week, but I probably wouldn't recommend this to almost anybody. I would talk with the person who is interested in playing it, and I could probably tell them in like 10 minutes of conversation whether I think they would like it or not. Like I talked to Dustin about playing it, and I'm like, you should not play this game. You will not like this game. Unless you're willing to stick with it, and I don't think most people would be. But that being said, I am having a good time nonetheless. And I have played a bit more of Motorsport. I kind of cooled off on Motorsport only because I did an entire series. And then my game crashed and I lost it. And so I haven't booted up since because I had just spent X amount of time going through a series. And yeah, it literally just completely erased it. And that kind of pissed me off a little bit. So I'm going to get back to it. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun playing Lords. And a new experience. Combat Evolved. Very cool, guys. Very cool. That's it. That's it.
Very glad to hear that. Not the part about motorsport erasing your game, which I hear is disturbingly common that's happening to numerous people. But I am happy to hear that you're finally getting around to
that's Halo, good shit, man.
Because some of my best gaming memories, not only from the multiplayer, but some of my best gaming memories in single player were from Halo back in the OG days. So it's good to hear. Dave, what about you? What have you been playing this week? It looks like an interesting lineup here.
Sorry. First of all, I'm really bothered by the order in which you played through the Halo series, Brandon. Did you watch like Desolation of Smog and then like Two Towers and then you watch Empire Strikes Back and then Harry Potter 4?
I don't watch any of that shit you just mentioned. Trash. Trash. All of it trash. But I didn't want to... Someone bitched at me at work about that too. They wanted me to play Reach first, and I get why... What is it? Is this the right word? Canonically, it would make sense to play Reach. I understand that, but like for my little lizard brain, I feel like I want to start with the oldest shit first and I want to watch the progression. Because as cool as it is, like, I had this thing last year. I started God of War from the beginning, played through. I think there is something, even regardless. Yeah, even in spite of how the story goes, I feel like it is interesting to see the direct evolution of the series and the technology almost. So,
yeah, I'm just teasing you, but I'm very envious of what you're saying, because I'm fondly remembering back when Master Chief Collection came out and I replayed through the series, and it was so fun.
It's fun, man. It's really good.
And it was weird because like I did the graphics toggle thing and I was like, this is so cool. And I kept going back and forth throughout the entire game because it was just so cool to see one, like the original, and two, how well it had aged. So yeah, I'm really envious of what you're going through right now.
It is funny because some of the new stuff in the toggle that they have, some of the newer ones, I'm like, well, why is this there? This wasn't in the original game. And then you toggle back to the original game and you're like, yeah, this,
right.
Like, this isn't capable of showing us that. So like they definitely took a little bit of creative liberty, but I think that's okay because it's not like it took away from the game.
I'll go quick because I haven't played much interesting and I want to give Ben lots of time to talk about Spider-Man and Super Mario. But I've still been playing through Assassin's Creed Mirage, which I'm going to say right now on the show, I'm going to be platinuming this game.
Hell yeah.
So create some accountability there, and a little bit more of Callisto Protocol. But the one interesting thing I have to say about Assassin's Creed Mirage is I played this game on my iPhone this week.
Damn.
I've never done remote play before, but I have a newborn baby and I was nap trapped, as it's called. And I couldn't come down here to play my PlayStation. So I booted up remote play and I grabbed my controller and I was playing Assassin's Creed Mirage on my iPhone, which is crazy. It was awful.
Oh no.
I'm not doing that again.
No.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it was good, man. No.
Like the quality was, I think, what it was supposed to be, but I just kind of like, I only played for about 30 minutes because I'm like, I'm really enjoying this game and I don't want to experience it like this because it's just too good. And I just feel like this isn't right. And then I got to thinking like, what game would be good or like acceptable or enjoyable on remote play on an iPhone? And I couldn't think of anything. Now I understand remote play also works and arguably is supposed to work with things like Chromecast, where it's on a TV that isn't necessarily connected to your PlayStation. But one of the selling features is also playing on your phone. And I don't really want to do it again. Like it was, I don't know. It's just playing a big game like Assassin's Creed is not good for a phone. But I tried it. So
Dave, can I give you the only reasonable and good experience I've ever had on remote play? In Mortal Kombat 11, you could make your bots fight fights for you and grind levels. That is the only thing, because I wasn't actually playing. That is the only... If you're not actually playing a game, that's the best way to use remote play, is if you're not actually playing a game. Let me be clear about that. That's the only thing I found. Seriously, the only thing.
So remote not play is what
you're
saying.
Yes, correct. Remote bot play.
Got it. Remote grind.
So, Dave, you're saying you're probably going to get a PlayStation Portal when it comes out.
No, I'm not. Like mobile games are scaled in a certain way to be good on a screen that's that big, but it just, I don't know, for Assassin's Creed Mirage. Again, I was impressed with what was happening in front of me, but just, I don't know, not a good way to play. So it'd be like watching Oppenheimer on an airplane screen. Like, it's just, it's not what it's intended. Yeah, yeah.
Was it the latency? Was it just the performance? Was it, what made it awful other than the screen size?
No, so the latency was fine. It wasn't perfect. The performance was fine. Not expecting, you know, big things. I think it was just the size. You know, there's a big game. There's a lot going on. There's a lot you have to kind of look at. And I found myself squinting, and I, you know, icons weren't as clear, and I don't know, just not as good. And the sound is a big thing too. So just a lot of like kind of quality pieces that weren't there. So, yeah.
Yeah. For me, I've been playing this week pretty much three games. Well, definitely three games. I've been playing Sea of Thieves Season 10. We'll start out with that. It is a dumpster fire. The season was delayed for like 9 months. Or it wasn't delayed 9 months, but the season before it went on for 9 months, which is the longest season they've ever had. And they had very few features that came out. And they took away some things that longtime sweats in the game have come to know for the past like 5.5-6 years, and they never mess with it. I've not been playing that long, but yes, things that I used to. And I'm not upset about the removal. It's so quick swap animation canceling is one of those things. And, you know, you used to be able to move around and shoot people twice before you could really and have an advantage, I guess you could say. Really, it was the movement that was the advantage. They took that away, and the way they did it made it so clunky that even if you're not trying to quick swap, it just totally throws everything off. So they've made some fixes. They're readjusting some things. The server performance was awful, absolutely terrible. It feels better the last couple of days because they took out some players from each server so that there's less stress on the servers. But it's still just, the game's always been glitchy, and I love it in spite of it. But I think it's probably in the worst place it's ever been. And some of the like Sea of Thieves partners that are out there that are usually like super positive on the game, Mr. Optimus, Mrs. Optimus, whatever, always, you know, pumping the game up or even shouting out that it was in bad shape. So that's been disappointing, but I'm still having a great time with it. They introduced guilds. So I've been, you know, going around trying to level up guilds and everything like that. And it's still the same game. It's still fun. It's just, there's a lot of performance issues that weren't there before. And I think for people who've been playing the game, new players are still going to have a great time. They're not going to know anything, but people who've been playing the game for a long time and know what's around are going to be bored right now. Now, granted, those players are still playing the game just like me, but it's disappointing for sure. Horizon Chat says that one stream you did, the servers were so bad. Yes, and they've been bad off stream too. So, I still love Sea of Thieves. I'm going to play it till the day they shut it down entirely, but it's in a rough spot for sure. Spider-Man 2. Let's talk about that for a minute. Spider-Man 2 is great. It's really hard to say much bad about it if you like the first game, because it is essentially the first game, just with more stuff. You get to play as both Spider-Man as Peter Parker and as Miles Morales. They're both Spider-Man, and they also obviously have different skill sets. You can swap between the two at any point, even no matter where they are in the city. There are a lot of interesting characters in the game. There are many longtime villains from the comics that people know, comics and you know, the series, the animated series especially, that are there, and it's good. The story so far is good. I'm probably about 7 or 8 hours into the game. And I've been just doing like all sorts of side stuff as well as the main missions. So I'm having a great time with it. There's a lot of people on Twitter complaining about bugs. I've not experienced any bugs at all, which is really good. I don't know if these people are having just a totally different experience than me, or I know there are for sure some bad actors just trying to create bugs so that they can console war. That's fine. Do what you want to do. But I've had a good experience either way. And I'm pretty tuned into bugginess and, you know, stuff like that. Performance wise, it's also great. The one conversation piece before the, you know, right as the game was coming out, was that it was so woke, and I'm not a person to use that kind of phrasing and talk about how it's woke and or something like that. And generally, I'm very much, not always, I'm very much a live your life, be who you are. I don't care. It's not going to, you know, whatever. It's not going to affect me. But I will just say, in a funny way, everyone in Spider-Man 2 is gay. Every NPC you meet, they're gay. And it's, I'm just like, okay, I get it. It's New York City, but not everybody is gay. Okay. So, other than that though, it's, I mean, that, and that's fine too. They can do what they want. The game, the people who made the game, definitely gets a representation in there. I understand it, but I'm like, is everyone in New York City actually gay, or is this just in Spider-Man 2? I've been there, and I don't remember everybody being gay, but it's certainly possible. But again, like, no hate. I don't have any issues or whatever, but I'm like, I did like five or six side quests in a row, and I'm like, every person I've done a side quest for has been gay. And it was just a little stunning to me. I'm like, I don't know if this is actually the right numbers here or not. But overall, Spider-Man 2, I mean, if you played either of the other Spider-Man games by Insomniac, either Spider-Man 1 or Miles, it's been great. Someone in chat says, let's be honest, everyone in New York City is gay. I don't think that's true. And if it is, it's fine. But I just felt like there was an inordinate amount of that. So, whatever, it's fine. It doesn't diminish my enjoyment of the game whatsoever. It was just odd to me, is all. I was like, literally five or six quests in a row was like, go save my boyfriend from this building, and then it was the whole thing. So
your boyfriend?
Okay. I'm loving it though.
Okay.
Not my specific boyfriend. Gotcha. The character.
Is everyone in Super Mario Wonder gay?
I have no idea. They haven't said anything about their sexuality. Somebody else said they get the blatant pandering levels. I don't think anyone appreciates that, including the people being pandered to. I can't comment on that because I'm not, I'm a straight white guy, but, definitely it's,
the funny thing, like you guys have all seen, they accidentally used a Cuban flag instead of a Puerto Rican flag.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I don't know how they did that when it was right in the first game, and that's such a big part. I think that's so cool, a part of the game, that, you know, they are able to intertwine that, at least from my perspective, that culture into the game and Miles's background. I think it's cool. But then they put the wrong flag in, which is kind of a rough thing. But Mario Wonder. It's been great. I'm loving this. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm basically picking it up when I don't have time to play Spider-Man, or when I'm just like in the living room on the couch while the kids are doing something, whatever, playing some Mario Wonder. It's a 2D Mario game. And by that, I don't mean to take anything away from it, because 2D Mario games are some of my favorite games of all time. It's fantastic. The inclusion of new powers, new power-ups, new abilities, I guess you could say, is really fun. The Mario elephant, or the elephant power up that everybody saw in the trailers, is just as fun as it looked like it was going to be. Going around, you know, you can blast through things easier. You can squirt your enemies with water, that kind of thing.
No, thank you, Brandon. Blast and squirt.
You do what to them?
What Patreon tier is that?
Yeah,
it's a $45 Patreon tier. It's great. I like the fact that, you know, none of the levels take a terribly long time, but they're still just challenging enough. And really, like, most of the levels you can kind of run through and be fine. But if you actually want to get the, you know, if you're a completionist of any sort, if you want to collect all the things to collect, you're gonna have to put a little more time into it, do a little more configuring and a little more figuring it out of things. The mini games, there's lots of mini games in it that are really fun. There are, you know, races and competitions of different sorts against NPCs that are good. I have not experimented at all with the multiplayer, the co-op. So I don't know how that is. I've also only played as Mario. I was going to play the whole game as Mario and then play as somebody else. But I know that there are, I think Yoshi and stuff are a little, they're somehow made to be easier. I don't know the full depths of that because I didn't watch really any trailers, because you said Mario, I'm going to buy it probably. So I'll let you guys know about that when it comes around. But so far, it's just, it's great. It's very bite-sized. The levels are quick. You can pretty much stop at any point. There are shops, of course, that you can buy things at. There are areas to unlock. When you're in each area, you can kind of, you don't have to follow straight paths. You can walk around, which it's just in an overworld menu, but it's still cool that you're not just walking in a straight path to choose your next level. That's not original to this game, but it's a nice inclusion. And the story is a Mario story, but it's still entertaining. You know, you're Bowser's bad and you're trying to stop him, you know. Sorry to spoil it for you, but that's the game. That's every Mario game that's ever been made. So it's wonderful. No pun intended. It's really a great game. And, you know, Nintendo could put out $60, probably even $70 Mario games a couple times a year. And I would probably still buy all of them and enjoy them if they were at this quality, for sure. So I'm having a blast and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. Now, when are you guys going to play it? Brandon, I know your answer.
Hopefully tomorrow.
Dave's in the mail.
Wait till one of you is done with it.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And that's it. That's it for the show. As usual, we'll stick around for a little bit, just a few minutes in the chat here and talk to those who are around. But if you're an audio listener, we appreciate you. And we appreciate all the video viewers as well. Don't forget, you can come over and join us on Discord at handsomephantom.com/Discord and be a part of the community. Talk to some other people who are like-minded or maybe not like-minded, but they also like video games. We appreciate that. And you can support us on Patreon over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. Special shout out to the Iron Lords podcast. I think specifically Addict. I'm not sure because it didn't give me an alert who was streaming, but somebody in chat said that. So go check them out over at the Iron Lords podcast on YouTube. They do lots of great stuff, good reviews, live podcast, all that kind of stuff as well. And I think that's it. Thanks, and we'll see you next week. The HP podcast is made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following patrons are at the $5 level or above: Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Jared, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Rainick, Christian Snow, Gravalicious, Benji Bop, and Johnny Waffles.